Good morning. This is Wednesday Talk Radio. And yes, this is the voice of Paul Rowland, the regular host. I've been on hiatus for a while. Had a bit of an emotional overload, I guess I'll say, and some sleep issues. So I just had to take a break for a while. So really good to be back here and back with my third Wednesday crew on the fourth Wednesday from Portland Assembly. And we're going to be talking about Ted Wheeler, neoliberalism personified. The millionaire mayor announces his re-election bid. We're going to talk all about Ted Wheeler with MK, Jonathan, and Sarah from Portland Assembly. Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Hi.
Good morning.
All right. Well, who wants to lead in and talk about Ted Wheeler? Or you want me to read this, what was on the KBOO program page?
Oh, you can if you like, if you want to start there. Yeah.
Yeah, is that a good way to start? All right.
Good primer.
Yeah, it's a kind of really synthesized there. So, okay, Ted Wheeler, Portland's millionaire mayor, has his fingers in a surprising number of pies involving Oregon's public resources, funding, and policy. As state treasurer, he oversaw the investment of almost $1 billion of PERS funds. That's the public employees' retirement something.
System.
Funds into the volatile and exploitative rental derivatives markets, effectively funneling public pension investments into private equity takeover corporations to bust private pensions, further displacement of poor communities, and raise rents. Also during his time as treasurer, Ted started a multi-state 501c3 West Coast Infrastructure Exchange with the goal of privatizing public resources like municipal water supplies. This group was heavily involved in the push to cap Portland's historically successful reservoirs and hand them over to private management. As Mayor Wheeler has been integral in the rush to pass the unreinforced masonry mandate against protestations of black communities and community organizations, now the city is involved in a heated legal battle over improper handling of this mandate and for violating a federal court injunction and to give the community time to respond and adjust. The combination of a wealthy, privileged background and manufactured progressive credentials make Ted Wheeler the perfect example of a neoliberal politician. He has been employed either in managing the wealth of the 0.1%, making governmental decisions, deregulating the industries where that wealth is extracted, or in the opaque world of public-private partnerships, the process by which our natural and public resources will be privatized. So, thank you, Sarah, for letting me read that and get back in the swing of things after quite a few weeks absent. All right, well, I'll kick it off to you all. Who wants to start?
Well, I mean, we thought perhaps the first thing we should do is talk about what neoliberalism is and get a good working definition.
Since we had Anti-Flag, the neoliberalism anthem, to start the show, which I forgot to mention.
So we were talking, and we think that a pretty concise definition is the repurposing and appropriation of both military, corporate, and progressive tactics in service of capital. Mm-hmm. So I have a really good example from our recent experiences with the city and the Central East Side Industrial Council. We spent a lot of local groups, Right to Survive, Street Roots, Sisters of the Road, VOS,
RAP,
spent a lot of time working with the CEIC about peer-run and peer-based solutions to houselessness issues. We basically found that they took the information we gave them, co-opted the language, and have started to issue their RFIs, requesting security groups who are trying to get the contract, tell them what they think a low barrier uniform
means
might mean. And I'm going to tell you that a low barrier uniform means absolutely nothing. We had introduced the concept of low barrier jobs, which means that we would like to facilitate people who might have trouble finding traditional employment, finding employment. They then took this and used it as a way to describe the uniforms for their security teams. So not only did they take this concept of harm reduction, but they turned it into something to disguise their militarized control mechanism, mm-hmm. Which is, of course, what private security police are. It's a mechanism of control.
Can I just interject? Because I just remembered, speaking of private security police, this morning at City Council, they'll be deliberating the G4S contract for G4S, the infamous worldwide security firm that's been implicated in many a dirty deed and many a dirty administration in the and corporate plunder around the world. So that's 9:30 at the City Council.
Wheeler has announced that he will not be taking public commentary on that.
Interesting.
However, there are lots of groups that are going to show up outside City Hall, so head down there at 9 if you want to make your voice heard in some way.
There will be public comment one way or another.
Yeah, actually, I was sitting right next to G4S. I didn't realize they actually were doing security on TriMet. Mm-hmm. I guess I've been out of it. And I don't know. I was about to say something to him, but you know.
I would also add that I think over the course of this conversation, sort of starting from just kind of a basis of what is neoliberalism, that it'll become more clear too. And a lot of things will make more sense, not just in terms of like things that are happening in one silo or the other, but those things that, you know, you see politicians or industry saying one thing and it sounds good, using phrasing like affordability and equity and inclusion, and yet the practice is anything but, and it takes on all of these different permutations. And I think through the course of this, there'll be a lot of things that, from that standpoint, say, you know, it makes a lot more sense now that you understand what neoliberalism is, how it's wrapped up, and how it operates.
Well, and one of the aspects of neoliberalism that people are going to be more familiar with is greenwashing, mm-hmm. Which has become something that is part of the conversation now because we see it happening so much. Corporations using friendly, feel-good language, PR that makes them seem environmentally friendly, but if it's, you know, BP, it doesn't really matter. Yeah. So that is, I mean, yes, neoliberalism is the process by which corporate money makes itself palatable and coordinates with government.
And also it is sort of the foundation on market supremacy, free mm-hmm. market supremacy, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. all that that means.
So why do we talk about this when we talk about Ted Wheeler? We actually kind of see him as like a poster child for this process. If you look at, so we know that Ted Wheeler's family has been in Oregon for a long time, pretty much as soon as they started out giving away native land in the 1860s, they were here. And they started consolidating that land. Of course, this is only possible because pioneers, who are the foot soldiers of white supremacy and Manifest Destiny, came out here first, followed by military, who are the mechanism by which the people who are already inhabiting that land are displaced, either through forced movement or through genocide, and those lands are secured. And his family was part of that process. And those lands that they consolidated were timberlands, pretty much a good chunk of the West Coast. What wasn't owned by, coincidentally enough, Dan Saltzman's family.
So where were most of the family's lands?
From what I can tell, so you know that there's Wheeler, Oregon, out there on the coast, which is named after his family. And that seems to sort of be the center of what they owned.
And exactly it's, where is that?
The coast?
Oregon coast, so like basically about Corvallis out west.
Established 1911, I think, after they cleared all the trees out of the other side of it. Had a mountain pass, you know, on the coastal range that kept the nice side.
Yeah. So his family owns all that land through years of the deforesting practices that we now know are incredibly harmful and completely impossible to come back from. So our wilderness has been decimated. The money made by that went into his family's pockets, which they used to buy more land. And then things started to look bad for the timber industry. I am from here, so I grew up in Oregon and definitely witnessed like the recession in the 80s, which was intensified here by timber leaving, by that industry becoming less viable, and by it becoming more consolidated. So there was a series of sell-offs of family companies to groups like Weyerhaeuser, or to groups that then sold to groups like Weyerhaeuser. So now vast swaths of that, you know, land that's been clear-cut and replanted with monoculture are owned by these corporate entities. And that's actually, in and of itself, kind of a good description of the process that neoliberalism attempts, right? So we've got these practices that we know are bad. They're bad for the earth. They're bad for people. And we know that the people who own that, who run that manufacturing, are not going to be able to continue in that way, and they recognize that too. So they want to change the way that what they're doing looks while retaining their ability to extract money, right? Mm-hmm. And that's what those that series of sell-offs was about. And I guess, I mean, if we look at, it's interesting because if we look at Ted Wheeler's career, in quotations, it has always been in service of that money and of that consolidation. So, you know, he went to, where did he go? Harvard,
he went
Columbia?
To three Ivy League schools, one right after the other. Yeah. Three Ivy League.
Yeah, and then graduated directly into the private financial sector. So he went to work for, was it Copper Mountain?
And that was actually sort of a small company that his brother also owned, but small, managing managing those with vast amounts of wealth, managing their money in all sorts of ways, trusts and investments, and then that private investment firm got acquired by Unical, I believe, and at that time, even though that investment company was small, they were managing about $6 billion in assets.
And just to interject, because this kind of sits poorly with me, there's a bit of this rhetoric around his PR of being a little naive and down home, and you know, that there's that kind of like logos appeal, right?
I was born in Portland.
Yeah, and I'll die here. Yeah, I bet.
You just said that, yeah.
But that he's really, really market savvy, and that he's Absolutely. Gone through all of this stuff, and he's, you know, bumped elbows with Bloomberg, and he's done all that track, and he is one of those people, but he puts off that he is not. And that's an intentional misleading
kind of
quality.
Well, when he ran for mayor, he was riding the coattails of a whole other different kind of momentum that was about, you know, sort of you know, he and Hugh Daly were both sort of like, the first thing we're going to do is kind of, you know, tackle this affordable housing crisis, and we're going to go to bat for the underdog. And so definitely, I think underplayed is an understatement. His deep rooted Wall Street inherited wealth, you know, being groomed to carry water for global capitalists. That didn't sit well with the momentum he was trying to ride in on.
Well, it was the same with his messaging on police. He mm-hmm. when he was campaigning, he was very much about, you know, police reform and getting things under control and saying the right things that marginalized communities, in his estimation, wanted to hear. But some of his first acts as mayor were to heavily police protests after the murder of
the two people on the Max.
Oh, Quanis Hayes.
No, Quanis Hayes by the police. The crackdown on those protests was.
Right? Oh yeah, I remember those. Yes.
Very intense and extreme.
Yes, I was there actually. Yeah, it seems so long ago.
Oh gosh. Yeah.
Well, this is also an indicator too, not just of the man, but also as the symbol of a neoliberal politician, who comes from inherited dynastic wealth, who has been groomed through not just one but three Ivy League schools, culminating in the Harvard JFK School of Business, where you know that is this training ground, and then managing the dynastic inherited wealth and managing the 0.1% wealth. And when his company got acquired, he had stock in it also, and so then he got this big payoff and all of that benefit.
The world, right?
That industry that he carries water for rewards him.
Well, and it's interesting to see how he takes these marks of privilege, like climbing Everest. That's an expensive trip, y'all. That is not just something that you take off and do on the weekend. But he has used this instead of saying, I paid hundreds of thousands of dollars to make this very curated trip. Yeah. He talks about how independent he is and what a maverick he is, and is creating this mythos around himself.
Absolutely.
I just wanted to mention, this is Wednesday Talk Radio. I'm a regular host, Paul Rowland, back after a couple months hiatus. Glad to be here. And I'm with MK, Jonathan, and Sarah, all from Portland Assembly. We're talking about Ted Wheeler. And I did want to mention that the number to call in on, since this is a call-in show, is 503-231-8187. 503-231-8187.
I think Sarah too. I think you hit on this thing too that Ted Wheeler creating this myth about him, these myths about himself, is also so in line with sort of some of the myths that capitalism creates about itself, and neoliberal in particular. This sort of like he's his own man, and yet he isn't, and the privilege to summit Everest as this rugged individualist is all made possible by anything but independence and that myth of neoliberalism that
that's
is sort
a
of
perfect image actually.
Yeah,
this vast team, not just the Sherpas, but all along the way there's this huge team supporting him.
Yeah, all along the way, people making him comfortable and showing him the way, and yet it's this sort of like progressive, nobody helped me, I pulled myself up by my bootstraps, and those are the same sort of myths that neoliberal capitalism creates about itself too.
I want to talk about, this is actually a good time to segue into this, so West Coast Infrastructure Exchange. So when Ted was treasurer, he was involved in starting this group. And I find it very interesting because the goal of this this 501c3 that he started in conjunction. Actually, can you?
Sure. Yeah, I'll give you some background.
Fill in a little on
yeah.
That?
So when Ted Wheeler went out, transitioned from private wealth management into the state treasurer and funneling public funds toward private equity. As treasurer, he started this basically a compact between the Western states, so BC, Washington State, Oregon, and California. And the Oregon treasurer sort of brokered this new thing, with a development grant from the Rockefeller Foundation. So it was a 501c3 that was basically a public-private partnership to sort of privatize public infrastructure. And they say public, it's a partnership, and yet that partnership is inherent in part private ownership.
That's your first world or first gen banking dynasty, Rockefeller, right? J.D. Rockefeller Foundation.
That's the Rockefeller Foundation. Yeah. And I doubt that Ted Wheeler said, "Hey, I got a good idea. Maybe we'll go to them." You know, his ascendance to this spot and at that particular place in time, and then this innovative idea, neoliberal innovation. Mm-hmm. Hey, how about we, the private sector might be way more better at managing public funds. Hey, there's the Rockefeller Foundation, and there's their guy.
Mm-hmm. So before we go to our first caller, Red Willow, who'll be up in a second. So could you mention a few of the things that the West Coast Infrastructure Exchange did?
Might sound familiar to some Portlanders who weren't aware how involved Ted Wheeler was. Do you want to take that, or do you want?
Well, I actually feel duped by this whole thing because I was very much paying attention to the fight about covering the reservoirs. Right, they used a federal mandate about a particular bacteria that's never been found in Portland water as a reason to cap those reservoirs. Yep. And I found it unreasonable at the time, but I did not see the machinations behind it, which were this group, West Coast Infrastructure Exchange. Yep. And I would assume that the goal is to not only put municipal resources like water into private management, which of course is going to drive prices up and allow them to make the profit instead of that going back into municipal coffers. Mm-hmm. But I also imagine that puts at threat our actual water sources and our water supplies. So Bull Run, say, mm-hmm. For privatization. Mm-hmm. And that is the thing that concerns me the most about this is the idea of Nestle going for Bull Run.
And they already went for the gorge, right? Recapping for people who'd never heard about that one, right? That
was... they've been fighting in the Dalles for mm-hmm. the past, 7 years.
Yep.
So
yeah, it was one of those things that's sort of a solution to a problem that doesn't actually exist. Mm-hmm. And that says, here are these, open gravity-fed reservoirs, and there's six of them, and out of concern for your safety.
Yeah.
then we're going to cap them, and then the private sector is going to come along, and there was a lot of controversy in there. And Ted Wheeler's name was sort of absent from the genesis of that.
Actually, just Cascade Locks, the main fight on the Nestle thing.
Mm, yes.
But before we go to Jonathan, let's go to our first caller. Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Red Willow. You're on the air.
Hello. Good morning. I also let me turn off this radio. Wow, there's a lot of feedback. Okay. The reason I'm calling in is that I worked with a child welfare change initiative from 2005 to 2011. I had occasion to work with Ted Wheeler on advisories such as the Child Mental Health Advisory Committee and such. So I had a chance to find out a little bit more about him before he ever ran for mayor. And just to be succinct, we'll just say that I didn't vote for him after having worked with him in committees. The reason being is that I just did not think that he was genuine, authentic, or could be trusted with the public trust. That's the reason. That's all I had to say.
Thank you. I actually didn't know he was involved in that, and it makes me...
Wait, what was
want
it?
To find, child welfare with the issues that have been going on with the state lately.
Well, if you worked with him from 2005 to 2011, that was before he was treasurer. Mm-hmm. So that was when he was still a private wealth management agent, because he didn't become treasurer until 2011.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So
yeah, I think I still have paperwork from those committees and stuff.
That's interesting that he was involved in those committees and also managing wealth at the same time.
I think someone might want to see that. He should probably hang on to that.
Yeah.
There's people really should find out where he has. How do I say this in a nice way?
You don't have to say it in a nice way.
Yeah, we're not nice to the mayor here.
I try to be nice because that's my general code of ethic. But where he has compromised himself for personal gain.
Well, you know, that you bring up a really important point, and that is that unlike like our representatives in the in U.S. Congress, where their statements of economic interest, we get to see what's inside their investment portfolios.
For instance, if I look at
Nancy Pelosi's SEI, I mean that thing's like an encyclopedia, and because her, you know, her husband is, you know, is a large sort of you know, investment capital banker.
She is so sold out. I mean, we cannot count on her.
But at least I can see what's in there.
We're just going to be disappointed again, like waiting for the Mueller report.
Well, this is the thing, is that we need to recognize that we see this in Ted Wheeler, who is a local level city mayor.
But I can't.
We need to be obvious to people. I know it is to people of color how he aligns with the police. When there's obvious that we need a reformation in the police department, this should make everyone very concerned.
Yeah. Oh, we'll definitely talk about the police, but what I want to point out is that we need to recognize that this is happening at all levels of our government.
Absolutely.
We can't talk about, say, Betsy DeVos and Eric Prince, the head of Blackwater, being brother and sister.
Blackwater, the private weapons
company. Without recognizing that this is infiltrated, this is every level of our government.
Yeah.
Okay, Wedwell, we got...
And they're making a stand now, because why let loose of all of these anti-abortion laws across the country at once?
This
is very well planned.
And the tax law.
We are on the defense. That we people that are looking out for ourselves as far as trying not to be overrun by the machine, you know.
Right on. We're on our own. You got to take
Red
care.
Will, we got to let you go. We got one more caller. And
okay, thanks for taking the call.
Thank you for calling.
Okay, y'all want to wrap up that point and we'll go to our next caller?
Well, I do want to say that as far as conflicts of interest with Ted Wheeler, that we can't see what's inside of his investment portfolio.
Yeah.
So we can't see how this person who managed these investments and stock trades and in essence has insider information as an elected official now, we can't see what his we just know that he has an investment portfolio, but unlike Washington, he doesn't have to disclose what he invests in personally for his own personal gain, and so we don't know what conflicts of interest there are. We just have all of this other circumstantial evidence that it's deep.
Okay, well, let's go to Sean, our next caller. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Hey, good morning. I was wondering, Paul, if you and your guests have heard of a book called Democracy in Chains by Nancy McLean. It's all about the rebranding of conservatism, and it makes me think of people that if you have friends or acquaintances and they tell you, well, I'm culturally liberal, but I'm fiscally conservative. That's conservatism basically rebranding itself under like the libertarian banner. And so next time you hear someone say that, like, just know that that person is a fascist. If they say they're fiscally conservative, that means they're in bed with Wall Street. They're sympathetic to the entire Wall Street agenda. It reminds me of Naomi Klein writing in The Nation in 2008 in the summer during the primary. She had an article titled Obama's Chicago Boys in The Nation, and it was all about how candidate Obama's economic team was all out of the University of Chicago, and yet he had this whole cultural facade of, oh, what a wonderful liberal he is, when all the while he's forwarding this ultra-fascist Wall Street agenda. So I'll let you take it from there. Thanks.
Well, and that's something that is definitely one of the earmarks of neoliberalism, is that, you know, party at this point, Republican, Democrat, kind of doesn't matter because they are all in service of corporate America. It is the merging of our government and corporate interests.
Which is probably the best definition of fascism I've heard, and I think I've heard it most used by Mumia in his speeches. That's definitely worth mentioning. But also worth pulling out of that example and out of all these examples is this kind of appeal to expert knowledge. Oh, you don't know. Oh, we have it over. You don't understand. Leave it up to us. We have your back. We'll get you. That is really this lineage of kind of colonial expansion at work.
Well, and let's look at how empty that is. Like, with this, you are URM thing that's going on. So we've got the unreinforced masonry bill or regulation, which Wheeler and Saltzman, again, it's interesting to see how these two guys who grew up in the same circles, have sort of walked the same halls of power, have been coordinating to push the things that they want that are in their interests and their friends' interests through our little government here. But so URM is the unreinforced masonry regulation
mandate.
That's supposed to bring buildings up to code. It does not provide any sort of funding for low-income owners. It does not provide help for community buildings or groups.
It does so at the threat of an earthquake that people have literally shrugged off for 50-plus years. You know, they
Which
just decided it's important.
Which was hyped by Dan Saltzman's sister-in-law in the New York Times.
Well,
yeah,
when,
Pulitzer winning piece.
When Saltzman was actually being deposed for this court case, and they sort of were talking about this idea and the push, and they said, well, you know, if there's a 20% chance of this happening sometime, you know, in the next 50 to 200 years, doesn't that mean that there's an 80% chance of it not happening? And then he said, you know, well, you know, I'm a fatalist, and that's just me. And so, but part of where the URM thing really crosses over into things like neoliberalism is, and where I think this pushes, is with the opportunity zones, this federal Trump tax plan that has designated all of the most valuable real estate in the core of Portland and elsewhere in the nation. And that's and those investments in order to avoid capital gains tax altogether. So those people that are selling and having all of these windfall profits, they don't want to pay taxes on it. But so there's a large concentration of these URM buildings in these opportunity zones in order to qualify for that massive tax avoidance, not even tax break, tax avoidance if they hold it for X period of time. Then with real estate, it's predicated on it either being new construction or parenthetically demolish and rebuild or you know, an expensive remodel. So those URMs are squarely in the crosshairs of a neoliberal agenda, and they called it an opportunity.
Recapping from the show we had done with Paul previously about that, where we were talking about rent speculation and how that affected the zoning. This mayor, after he consolidated all those different bureaus underneath himself, had also designated the entire downtown, including all of the well-developed areas, which the opportunity zone is supposed to be for opportunity in places that haven't had it. And so that was obviously suspicious, but that's kind of what's landed us in this development boom now. And it was till 2026, I think, that they had deferment for the tax, you know, it was a tax-free investment until then, right? So there is a window that all of these rich guys are trying to make, which is what it seems like.
Yeah, there's a deadline for the opportunity zones, too. The deadline, time is of the essence in order to qualify for just the minimum. And I believe the deadline for the opportunity zone fund investments I think it's 2021 to get it fully invested.
Well, real quick, just because I feel like this is something I'm going to say again, I'll probably see throughout the show, but you know, this idea of it needing to go do tree sits or go to the oil refineries and make them stop, or like all this method of stopping the actual productive means of capital, like it's shifted. Now the actual epicenter of where this is coming from is literally the buildings under your feet and the sidewalks in your city. Like 20% of our GDP is made up of real estate and finance investment. So it's literally the new epicenter of colonial capitalism right in your city. Like, need to take note there.
That's really well said.
I just want to, Thomas, you're up next in just a minute. I want to let people know that coming up after this show, the radio activist with guest host Rachel Dixon will be talking to Donathan Smith of the Portland Harbor Community Coalition about eco-justice and how you can be an important part of making our community livable for all. After that at 10, it's Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. At 11, it's a radio zine. Not sure what's on there, but I'm sure it'll be an important program. And all these KBOO programs are made possible by members' support. If you'd like to become a member and you haven't yet done so, go to kboo.fm and use our mobile app and click on Donate. All right, you are listening to Wednesday Talk Radio. I'm host Paul Rowland, back after a couple month hiatus. Glad to be here with my guests from Portland Assembly talking about Ted Wheeler, neoliberalism personified. Okay, Thomas, you're up. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah, thanks. I had heard another caller mention that they didn't vote for the mayor because of some previous experience they had, and I happen to have some firsthand knowledge that the mayor has had a mistress for over a decade and participates in drug parties. I heard accounts of him snorting cocaine and other things, and I just think it's important that people know these things, and this is these are the people that are, you know, as you guys are pointing out, supposed to be accountable and managing public trust in an accountable fashion, and they just don't.
I just want to say, that's a
investigation.
We obviously can't say anything about that. I don't know about the. I assume there's no legalities involved. It's a listener making an allegation that we have no idea about. And
of course not. Of course you don't. But I mean, I have firsthand knowledge. I wouldn't be telling you that if I didn't have the firsthand knowledge. I'm not making it up.
Right on, dude.
I'd be willing to sign an affidavit to this. I have names.
That's just impressive.
It's just, yeah. Well, I mean, it's ridiculous because
I'm going to say that. I think that it's pretty obvious that, like, we live in a world where people's private morals transfer to their political, like,
oh yeah,
realm. Well, but I mean, also think that, like, I don't need to impugn that aspect of his character because there are so many publicly impugnable aspects of his character. Like, if we talk about the purse funding that he transferred when he was state treasurer, like, to me, that's just as bad as what you said. Like, and so I think that there's a sort of a proliferation of evidence of poor character here.
There's such a large menu, and it's sort of like, am I in the mood to talk about the dessert, or do I want the Dagwood sandwich?
But to kind of bring it all home to neoliberalism, like, this is the class he comes from. I don't think he's an exception or anything. Like, I don't want to dismiss him or justify, like, oh well, you know, we don't have to be so mean to him, because no, like, he is just as vile and disgusting as rich people have been throughout the history of this entire nation. Like, talking about Pinkerton and so on, like, they've always had contempt and antagonism for working class, and he's no different. He just puts a happy face on it.
The problem with the power dynamic, right? The power dynamic of someone in that position of power who uses their expertise and position and is disingenuous, does not reveal their true nature to people, and everyone thinks that, you know, it's a person that can be trusted. It's not okay.
Well, we were talking about how he ran on a certain set of principles, and then those principles seemed to be immediately discarded as soon as he was elected mayor. Mm. And I think that one of the ways that we can see that happening the most quickly is the assignment of bureaus, which highlights both his personal character flaws and the flaws of our governmental system here in Portland. Mm. So you've got, he assigns himself everything related to housing and development and the police, which means that he is both in charge of the land and the militarized police force that is used to patrol it.
Wheeler, feudal lord.
Yeah, basically.
Okay, thank you, Thomas, for calling in. I appreciate that. And we've got a couple other callers. Should we just go to our next caller?
Sure.
Okay, Joan, you're up. Hello, Joan.
Hello?
Oh, maybe it's not Joan. Hello?
No, there was no screener. My name is Mitch.
Okay.
Well, hi, Mitch.
And I was just calling to follow up on the wild allegations of your previous caller, and I'm glad a few people objected to the wild allegations, because that is the trademark that was used to allow national figures like Hillary Clinton to become Secretary of State And while the Koch brothers were attacking her ad hominem, which means to go after her personality, her record in public office was never fit for public discussion or news coverage. So we never heard about, for instance, the years while she was Secretary of State and then campaigning to run for president. We never heard about her role supporting the Honduran coup.
Oh, yeah.
That gets pushed to the margins.
Or
that's
Haiti.
Koch brothers' technique. So I think the previous caller, who sounds like he's just adding to your arguments, is in fact marginalizing your arguments, because what will be covered is these crazy allegations that, you know, he's going to sign an affidavit, this caller, right? This is typical use of oligarch money.
Well, sure, but that's why I said that we don't need that. That is sort of immaterial. We've got plenty to go on.
Since I made a disclaimer to that caller about, let me make a disclaimer to you. We have no idea, again, about the truth of his allegations. So we'll just leave it. It's a good point you're making. I don't know. You know, we don't know the truth of it. So we'll just. But the point, fundamental point we're all making, is that that's not the main thrust of what we're talking
agreed,
about.
Agreed, and just be wary of the tactic.
Okay. Oh, totally. And gotcha. I think we've spoken before, in fact, talking about neoliberal tactics. That is, in fact, the thing to avoid, right? Getting caught up in their PR and their bureaucracy, because you can tell just by what he is, it's going to be that. It's going to be that every time when it's some older family with money who's wealthy and puts their wealthy white son in charge of power. Like, it's always the same, right?
And I think what you're doing in excavating Ted Wheeler is useful. Just let your listeners know that there are resources online in universities. Yes, the University of Chicago tends to provide the policymakers, but if you go online and you search under the sorts of academics that have been writing about how neoliberalism works, mm-hmm. and showing the operations with very simple concepts, you know, like how, you know, Obama, as you well pointed out, is a privatizing continuity to Trump. Trump is not an aberration. The policies remain continuous.
Oh, yeah. Trump is he's their guy, too. He's their
and
pick.
Just point people to Saskia Sassen online and Saskia. Her articles, or point people, as you well did, to Naomi Klein. Mm. But there are also people who have taught at Princeton, bastions of elite power, like Sheldon Wolin, who does a series of interviews with on YouTube that I call YouTube the University of Tube. I know they're privately owned. I know they're a Google asset, but the fact is people can educate themselves.
Sheldon
and
also
they don't have to make wild allegations.
I think Sheldon also coined the term inverted totalitarianism to sort of describe this, especially from this market standpoint. I would also add Naomi Prinz to that list.
Perfect.
As well.
Naomi Prinz's appearances on YouTube, you can give yourself an Ivy League education and don't rely on Ted Wheeler's resume.
I'll just add that on the program page for the show, Wednesday Talk Radio, which you can go to on KBOO.FM, my comrade here, Sarah, has provided us with some other excellent links you can follow to find out more about this subject. The program name is Ted Wheeler, Neoliberalism Personified. Thank you so much, Mitch.
Thank you, and please introduce your panelists for the public.
Okay, well, the voice that you just heard, MK, go ahead, say something.
I'd like to talk about PERS after we make some introductions.
Okay, and Jonathan?
Yeah, Jonathan from Portland Assembly.
And Sarah?
I'm Sarah from Portland Assembly. Talk
okay,
about PERS.
Talk about PERS, and Giuseppe, you're up next. Just hold on a couple, 3 minutes, okay?
Yeah, and I think just specifically, you know, Ted Wheeler as the state treasurer, and to talk about PERS, not so much, there's other stuff that's going on with PERS right now, but to talk about this concept, this neoliberal concept of Wheeler as this sort of agent who has been groomed for this job, going from private wealth management into a position of public trust. And one of the things that happened with PERS as soon as Wheeler became treasurer is that it took quite a turn, and And think about where things were in 2011. Mm-hmm. So he became treasurer in 2011, just post-crash. There was a lot of awareness about what Wall Street had just done, what private equity had just done. Private equity was cleaning up house and was profiting from the foreclosure crisis. Ted Wheeler becomes the treasurer, and almost immediately brokers deals to double down PERS investments into private equity specifically, and it was almost $1 billion, $800+ million that first turn, the majority of it to Blackstone. Blackstone, the world's largest private equity corporation, Wall Street's biggest landlord.
Wait, just because you had just mentioned it also, and I think that was on the show we'd been on before, Paul, but Blackstone itself was born from that crash, which also was created by that same lobby, Wall Street lobby, who had given all of that lobbying money to create the, you know, first the Dream Act and the first American Home Buyers Act and so on in the early 2000s, that created all that housing stock that they then clapped up, and they basically clapped it up on the TARP bailout too. So they took taxpayer money to go build them, took taxpayer money to go buy them through the bailout. They stabilized the housing market, quote unquote, by buying all the properties per Ben Bernanke, and then they turned it into a worldwide landlord corporation. And
investment
fund. And that's where PERS money went. That's where Ted Wheeler put
the PERS. Also, this sort of part and parcel of this neoliberal agenda also is that it creates these predicate conditions to extract that, and then commodifies it and sells it back to us or rents it back to us. Mm-hmm. And at that time, at the TARP bailout, 2011, where we're bailing out Wall Street, but not people that are getting foreclosed from their homes, then we also have large public pension money also fueling that speculation. Mm-hmm. And then fast forward to where, you know, right now, just in January, now over 22% of the PERS portfolio is invested in private equity. And just in January, the Investment Council met with Blackstone again just this year, and they're thinking of upping their investment to over $3 billion in private equity, specifically a Blackstone fund that is, and there's other, you know, public pension money going there, it's supposed to be eventually a $40 billion U.S. infrastructure and real estate fund. $20 billion of it is coming from sources like public pensions all around the nation, and the other $20 billion, the Saudis have inked a deal for that same fund to contribute the other $20 billion because they are divesting from oil and investing in partnership with Blackstone. And just parenthetically, this isn't just Wheeler making deals for, you know, Blackstone that's over there in New York. Blackstone has been buying up rental properties here in the Portland area. They spent over $2 billion just in 2 years, just Blackstone purchasing up rental property.
Over 26,000.
Can you say Jared Kushner?
I mean...
Anyway, so yes, this is a point we made on that rent financialization rent speculation show that, mm-hmm. as you say, this process that Ted Wheeler helped Oregon, the PERS, invest in is fueling this massive, massive transformation of our fair city of Portland, of which Ted Wheeler is now the mayor. Okay, we've come full circle. Let's go to Giuseppe, our next caller. We've only got about 10 minutes left, so please be succinct. Hello, you're on the air.
Hi. Lovely discussion. Thank you so much. Can you fit Charlie Hale into this at all? Thank you so much.
Oh, well, sure. A little bit. I mean, yeah. Charlie yeah. Hale is the same kind of person, really. I mean, he has his background in engineering, but his engineering was all about that public-private partnership as well. Streetcars, exactly the same sort of thing. That same process of extracting wealth and displacing people and selling things back to us.
Charlie Hales was also formerly, you know, the president of the Portland Metropolitan Home Builders Association, the same entity that in 2015, when you know, double digit rent increases were here and people were suffering. The Home Builders Association won a national recognition award for their their new strategy that they had employed, because they knew that they were fighting a demolition tax, basically, because people were also, you know, saying the city is getting destroyed, affordable housing is being demolished. And they got a national award recognition for their new strategy. They bragged about it online, where they basically said that they knew that their usual approach with the big stick of going in and threatening lawsuit wasn't going to work. And so this is their words, they seized the progressive agenda and attacked from the left and engineered testimony. And then they went on to say, you know, Portland loves its progressive this or that. And this was also the genesis of this neoliberal Trojan horse that says, wow, like if we just wrap all of our agenda up in the words like affordability and equity and inclusion, we don't have to do that. But and then it worked. And then we saw that success start to spread out. And here we are today, where we've got developers like Clyde Holland in partnership with Blackstone talking about affordability. Yes. And
that's the Portland for everyone guy.
Well, he's Washington State's billionaire. He's the number one Washington State's number one contributor to the Trump Victory Fund, and he also contributes to Portland for Everyone, Thousand Friends of Oregon, and he is also the chairman of the Up for Growth Coalition, aptly named,
which Wheeler is part of.
Yeah.
Yes.
So another thing about Hales that I see as similar, I actually was trying to work with Charlie Hales on some police reform aspects after there was an incident where an African-American kid named Tigeru was harassed by police in his neighborhood going to meet his mom at the grocery store. And we were working on doing some work with youth to try to build some ways to communicate with police. And he committed to this process of talking to these high school kids and went to one meeting and then started sending excuses and was not at all invested in the process. It reminds me very much of the way that Wheeler took over the police department, saying that he was invested in certain things, and now those things are not happening in the slightest, and in fact we kind of are going in the other direction.
Wasn't Hales on his yacht during the spring water sweeps?
Yes, and yeah. he invited all of these people in the first place. He was one of the first people like be the architect of selling off Portland. He rode off on a yacht, you know.
Yeah.
Okay, so yeah. We got only a few minutes left. We got a couple more callers. We may be able to fit one, probably not two, but we'll try. Steve, you're up, go ahead.
Thanks for taking my call. I'm a long-time KBOO supporter and listener. As far as PERS, the first time I heard of PERS was at the time of the Exxon Valdez oil spill. There was going to be a stockholders meeting right after that environmental catastrophe, and the largest owner of Exxon stock was PERS. I found that sort of interesting. And the other thing is I'm a neo-centrist, meaning I'm just to the left of right of center. And I've been observing poll politics since the 80s, and it seems like there's a tripartite power, cultural power system in Portland whereby it's checked and balanced between the AFSCME, the Multnomah Athletic Club, and Darcells. As far as Wheeler's concerned, you know, governments exist to serve the interests of ruling elites. I ain't one. I'm just an observer. What? I think we need to get on board with Alan Alley's plan for looking at PERS.
Okay, well, we only have a little time left.
I actually want to go away from PERS and talk about like what we think the steps forward are.
Yeah.
Alan Alley's plan is the most sound that I've heard, so I would defer to him on this.
Okay, well, thanks for calling.
Yeah, right on.
I think that, like, talking about going forward, Portland Assembly is not particularly invested in the mayor's structure. We're definitely proponents of increasing our number of city council members, sort of spreading that power around
district
to neighborhoods.
Neighborhood representation.
I personally I'm going to vote for Teresa Rayford for mayor in hopes that she will just dismantle the mayor's office. Mm-hmm. In addition to the police department, I love the push that we're getting right now to dismantle the gang enforcement team, which is a completely useless suck of money that only exists to further marginalize and extract wealth from Black and brown communities. So I'm very excited to see that happening. And I just think we should continue in that direction.
And I would just say too that, like, as people talk about and engage in debates about housing, and if once you start to sort of recognize this, you know, these sort of signs of neoliberalism, I just want to say sort of that, like, neoliberalism denies its own inherent racism,
mm-hmm.
And the whitening of investment by laundering it in progressive rhetoric.
Mm-hmm.
And so the cognitive dissonance is very strong. But once you start to sort of digest that, and then as you look around with the debates that are happening around here, around policing, around houselessness, around housing, then things start to make a lot more sense.
Yeah, and I mean, just to wrap up quickly, Teresa Rayford for last mayor of Portland is a good thing, not just because of the history, because we can see it in the business structure influencing government, but it's kind of an intuitive thing. We know that this is a replicated problem all across the world, all across every city. We're seeing it happen all over. Like, this needs to be a kind of resurgence of popular power. Otherwise, we're going to end up with just Wall Street cities. That's what we're looking at.
Absolutely.
You know?
All right, we have about 45 seconds left. And so I just want to say thank you to my guests from Portland Assembly, Sarah, MK, and Jonathan, talking about Ted Wheeler. Please go to the program page, kboo.fm, Wednesday Talk Radio, Ted Wheeler, Neoliberalism Personified, get some more links, and tell your friends about this show.
Can I do a quick promo? So Cider Riot, which is a pub and venue nearby here, which has been harassed by Patriot Prayer over the last few weeks, is hosting a fundraiser for Anaris Bookstore on May 25th at 7 p.m. Cider Riot. It's 8th and Cooch. We'd love to see you there.
May 25th.
Thank you, Cider Riot.
All right, and coming up next is The Radio Activist with guest host Rachel Dixon. Thank you for listening.
Yeah,
I should have warned you.